This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here, back again with Jim Pouliopoulos. So for people who are tuning in, this is part three of our conversation. We talked about authenticity. We talked about persuasion and sales processes. He gave us a lot of value, a lot of nuggets, both on the authenticity side and then his diamond sales process. If you don't know what that means, you missed part two. Shame on you. But once you're done listening to this, go back and check that out because there's a lot of good stuff. His background, his information will be in the show notes. Just so you know, he's the founder and director of the professional sales program at Bentley University. He's been there for quite some time. He started this sales program up to a lot of different things. This episode is about the future of sales, right, Pouli? So let's talk about, and I think this is probably the best place to start, is you wrote a book, and I absolutely love the title, and I'm excited to check it out. It's called How to Be a Well-Being, right? So it's not just about well-being, it's about how to be a well-being.
Exactly.
Let's talk about that in terms of the future of sales, which of course the future is now. Where does that matter now more than ever? Or where is that vital now and in the future of well-being, especially in sales?
I think if you look at the past 3 years, ever since the pandemic started, the move to remote work, the fears over the pandemic, the recent struggles in the economy, there's so many things that externally have affected people's happiness and well-being, including sellers, right? But everyone, right? The entire population of the world, frankly. So for me, I think the thing to think about is one of the lessons that came out of all this the last few years has been a greater focus on individual well-being. Like people have really started to think a lot more intentionally about their mental health, right? And because of the emphasis in that area, I think a lot of people are hungry for what can I do to be happier, right? What can I do to be more positive? What can I do to have a better work-life balance, or at least have a better sense of control over my day? For me, a lot of it is you can take all of it at a big general level and bring it right down into the selling profession. So the future of sales for me is a return to being human, right? Because I think that we embarked a couple of decades now of technology really infusing the sales process so we can go faster, right? So we can be more efficient with sales velocity and databases and technology and making it all automated and sending and receiving messages automatically and mass emailing and mass calling. And there's so much technology. And at the end of the day, the rubber meets the road where two people have a conversation. But the conversation happens at the end of a long chain of events, as opposed to how it used to be, right? Which was the conversation actually is an ongoing conversation that takes place over a period of time. You get to know people on a genuine level. So I think one of the things about the future of sales is your own personal well-being, your own sort of mindset and mental health become one of the superpowers to be able to build and create rapport with other humans. And that rapport building early in a conversation is what will fuel greater sales success. So we might have more calls and we might have more interactions with prospects, but the moment that we get on the phone or on a Zoom call or in person, we really have to be our genuine selves because that's the only unique thing we can offer is our genuine, unique selves. And the higher level of your personal happiness. So some people think about this as that's a nice word, Pouli. It's squishy, right? Happy. I don't have to be happy. I'm working. I'm not talking about happy in the sense of, you know, toxic positivity where everything is good. I'm talking about happiness as like almost like a bank account. With the happier you are, the more you work on your sort of average level of happiness on a daily basis, you're building a reserve of well-being. And then when you hit a difficult time in your day, a difficult time in your life, you can draw from that being and still have enough left over to be in a positive state of mind. What are some of the daily things you can do as a human to raise your level of positivity? What are some of the things you can stop doing to avoid engaging in the negativity bias? That's an evolutionary trait that we all share. Those things will help you in sales. They'll help you in life. But if you're in sales, especially where you are faced with rejection all day long and pressure all day long, just being able to know that you're doing something on a daily basis to prepare you for those tough moments frees you, frankly, to be better at selling. And it disengages you from the outcome. I know we talked about that in a previous episode too, but being a better state mentally disengages you from the outcome of the call. That is a very free, independent way to have a sales conversation.
So what are a few actual, let's say, tactical practices, things that someone can take away from this, yeah, right? Beyond just like, hey, just be happier, right, and disconnect, right, from the call, but like actual, because again, yeah, everyone knows that sales is tough, right? When you're doing great in sales, you're still losing more than you're winning,
yeah, exactly,
at bats. Right. So what are some like tangible things people, yeah, could do right away?
So for me, after every call, after every conversation, every call with a prospect, people have to do call reports. They have to update their CRM, all the things you have to do as part of being in sales. I think you keep a little journal and you say to yourself, what are two or three things that went really well in that call? What did I learn from the two or three things that went really well? Just be very introspective and ask yourself, even if the call failed, right? What did I learn from that call? Looking for those sort of positive little dots in that conversation will make you seek those things in future conversations and enhance on them, right? On a personal level, every day, you can write down two or three things that you're grateful for in your life. Just two or three things that you're grateful for every day. A lot of positive psychologists that have written about this and researched that say that's one of the most powerful things you can do, which is write down something you're grateful for every day or a handful of things, because you're rewiring your brain to look for positive things. When you are looking for positive things, you're fighting back on that negativity bias that all humans have to find negative or dangerous things in their environment, which is what we naturally do from an evolutionary point of view. But we're not being chased by a lot of saber-toothed tigers anymore, right? So we don't really need that much, but that's what's built into our basic part of our brain. So we need to get our brain thinking about positive things. I find that sellers who are optimistic, or at least have more of a positive outlook on a conversation, ask better questions. And they're not afraid to ask some tougher questions because, again, they've got a bank account of positive energy built up where they're okay if they can ask a question where the answer might be not in their favor, but they've got that ego strength to ask the question. And I think those are just two little things like that can help. There's whole books written about it that talk about all the daily things, but part of it is practice doesn't make perfect, but practice makes permanent. And if you practice looking for positive things every day, eventually your brain will begin seeking those things because you form new synapses and you'll seek them in conversations with clients. You'll have more upbeat conversations. I think those are two little things. Write down what went well on the call and write down three things that you're grateful for at the end of each day.
And I think what's important too in that is I love the post-call feedback, like what went well. I think it's also, especially once you have that mindset and you have the savings account saved up enough, yep, where you can handle it, is having a mindset of being open and curious about what could I have done better? What could have gone, yes, different? What could, right, I do to improve myself? Because, yep, what I've learned too, and I know that we talked about this like early on, which is what can I control?
Yes,
and yes, when you don't run from what you can control and you think, we talked about this before recording at all, which is a lot of people just feeling like they're just waiting for something else to happen. And, yeah, if this happens, then hopefully everything will get better. And that it never happens. And B, like then you feel out of control and that's tough mentally.
And the way that you phrase the question is perfect, because what I had written down on my little notepad here was the word could, right? Because write down three things you think went well in the conversation and then write down three things. What could I do different next time? Mm-hmm. What will I do differently next time? As opposed to writing down three things that went poorly, right? Because, mm-hmm, what you're doing is by asking yourself, what could I do differently? What would I do differently? How will I do this differently in the future? You're taking what might have been a negative part of the conversation and you're doing a quick little diagnosis and a little brainstorming. And it's another experiment you can try on your next conversation, right? And then maybe turns into something positive. Or maybe you learn a little more about what does and doesn't work and you keep evolving it that way. But I think, and that's a 3-minute, 4-minute exercise, right? After a conversation, everyone's got that amount of time. So instead of running out, getting a cup of coffee or getting up to, I don't know, put some balls in the office, whatever it is that you do right after a call.
Or just moving on to the next call and like carrying this thing with you.
Yeah. You need that little intentionality and a little bit of space right in between. So I think that's key, right? I think that's key. Another thing I would say too, I think sales is a very competitive sport, right? We're all looking at each other, like who's meeting quota, who's not, who's number one seller, who's going to President's Club, right? All these things that we're just surrounded by. And that can be dangerous, right? Because you begin to compare yourself to others who have completely different situations and different random things happening in their life that allow them to either be successful or not as successful. This was a hard one for me, and I struggle with it, I would say daily, which is to stop comparing yourself to somebody else. Mm. Stop comparing yourself to other people. It's really hard to do in sales because it's all around us. We know who the top sellers are, who the worst ones are. But again, as a little exercise, daily, weekly, monthly, whatever it happens to be, just ask yourself the question, how have I improved from a year ago? How have I improved from 6 months ago? Whatever time frame makes sense to you, just say, how have I improved in the following areas in my life, professionally and personally? And keep a little running list like that, because really, if you compare yourself to who you were in the past, it's a way better barometer of your success and your journey than just comparing yourself to somebody else today. And like I said, I think that might be the hardest thing I've ever had to do, is rewire my brain around that. And I still struggle with it. So it's not perfect, but I'm getting better at it. And I think that's an awesome, important thing for people.
I love it, because from a mental health standpoint, it's you playing the game of you, not you versus everyone else, because everyone else has a different path,
right,
and a different life and a different place and going through different things. And so that's super important. When we talk about the future of sales, so talking about like the, one of the things you've said now twice is that really the big thing that matters now more than ever is that when you're on the phone or Zoom or in the meeting, that's when you're actually needed to do what we need you to do in sales, which is to be a human talking to another human, right? And moving them forward in the right way. And so what do buyers want more of now and in the future? More of and less of?
They want more genuine interest, right? They want to know that they're not just the next number that you called, right? They want to know that a little bit of something about them, a little bit of research ahead of time, something relevant that you can bring up with them. What they don't want is, they don't want faux interest or empathy, which is, I think I joked about it before, which like the last thing I want to hear when a salesperson calls me is, hey, Professor Pouliopoulos, this is Sally Smith calling from XYZ Corporation. How's your day going today? I don't want to hear that, because you don't care about me, Sally, right now. You don't know me. You're not asking me because you genuinely care. You're just doing that to disarm me a little bit. Ask me a question that I might have some interest in answering, or show that you've done some research, right? I saw that you won this award, or I saw that your students had a competition, right? Bring something relevant up. So buyers want to know about that relevant rapport building, not just rapport building for rapport building's sake, doing a little bit of research, or at least opening a conversation in a way that they get the sense that you're there because you care about them as an individual, not as the buyer persona that you're calling. So I think that's the key. I think that's a big key.
It makes sense. And so how do you get sellers to do that though? Because as much as I agree with you, so many people still do that. Hey, how are you doing today? Oh, that's great. Hey, how's it? Like, just that classic rapport attempt.
Yeah. So part of it can be through training and coaching, right? So sales managers play a key role in all of this, which is to say, how do you talk to your seller? How do you talk to your seller as a sales manager before they get on that important call? Is it all about we got to push this forward. We got to get this to the next stage. We got to close this deal. Because if you do that, they're going to be desperate. If you ask them some better questions as a sales manager, hey, before you get on this call with this executive, tell me a little bit about their personality. What do we know about them? What drives them? What are they ultimately trying to achieve in this role that they're in? Are they trying to keep their job? Are they trying to get promoted? Are they afraid of getting fired or laid off? What do we know about them? And your seller is initially going to be like, I don't know. I just asked them the standard discovery questions we always ask. I don't know what they care about. On this next call, why don't you spend some time trying to figure that out with them? That is one way to change a salesperson's demeanor in front of a prospect, right? And the prospect then begins to, at first, they're going to be a little defensive, right? Why is this person asking some of these questions? But the more you keep at it from a genuine point of view, the more they begin to let their guard down. You know that old saying in sales, people like to do business with who they know and trust? It's not quite right. They like to do business with someone that they know first, begin to like, and eventually trust. It's not a know and trust thing. It's not a Venn diagram. It's a journey. So you might get to know me a little bit in the first time we talk, and I might leave you with a little bit of intrigue so you want to talk to me again. Maybe I spent so much time in discovery, you didn't learn enough about what my company does, and you want to have another conversation with me because I took my time to diagnose you. Now we get on that second call. They start to like me a little bit. I like his personality. I like the way he has these conversations. He's not pushing. He's very at ease and confident. I like that. He's knowledgeable about my business. I like that. Make a few promises. I'll give you this information. I'll connect you with this resource. Then eventually you're like, I trust this guy. He said he's done everything he said he was going to do for me. He served up great questions, made me think a lot about problems I didn't even realize I have. I trust them. And so that's the future of sales, which is the past as well. It's like you can't short circuit the relationship building with someone. And a lot of times sellers will say to me, yeah, but I get on the call with a prospect and all they want is a price quote. They want to know, do we have feature X, Y, and Z? And then they just want a price quote for 1,000 employees to use this service. What do I do in that situation? I think you have to slow it down and say, why do you need the solution? What problem are you trying to solve internally? And if they completely keep putting the brakes on you, you have to at some point say to yourself, I'm just being used as a third quote here. I don't really have a chance to sell something to this person. He's not really interested in what I know. So I'm sorry. I don't think you're a good fit for us. I'm not going to be able to provide you with a price quote. It takes a lot of courage to be able to have that part of the conversation. But that other mindset, the mindset goes both ways, right? Again, for the future of sales, can we get sellers to the point where they're genuinely empathically interested in the person on the other side of the table and they have a mindset that says, you have to prove to me that you're a good fit for what we do. And if they have that mindset, they're going to ask different questions. And those questions will reveal things that the prospect maybe doesn't even know they need, right? But those are better questions. And then there's more of a leveling that happens here. Two people begin to view each other as peers rather than seller down here and prospect up here. So I think that's part of it.
Which totally shifts the dynamic from salespeople thinking, I'm doing this to you. My goal is to get you to buy instead of going back to, like you said, even from the beginning, first episode on authenticity, is I want to find a way to help you. What is it you need and how can I help you? Just like you would in any other relationship or any other dynamic. Is this a good fit? Can I help you? Yeah. Can I provide some value? Versus I've got a job to do. My job is to separate you from your money. And let's just see how that goes. We dislike that about salespeople. It still seems to keep happening, which again is why I love programs like yours, because you're teaching the future people a way to do it that's more in line with sales as a profession versus just going out there and winging it.
I think salespeople, good salespeople, are the easiest person to sell to. Because if a salesperson does it correctly, and if a salesperson doesn't correctly, like whenever I go to buy something major, a car, right? You know, I was helping my daughter look at some cars a few years ago. We had this young guy that was trying to sell her a car. And I was cringing because it was just so bad. And at the end of it, he goes, I'm the number one seller in the dealership. I sold X amount of cars last month. Interesting. He goes, what do you do for a living? He asked me, right? I said, oh, I work at Bentley University. Oh, what do you teach? So I handed him my business card, you know, director of professional sales. Oh, you run the sales program. How'd I do? How'd I do? I said, you were fine. You were fine. And then we left. So I love it when someone has a conversation with me about something I want to buy, where they just genuinely care and they're asking me good questions. I want to be helped and guided through the conversation to ultimately have the right outcome at the other end for me. And that is not how most people sell, right? Most people feel the urge to get through the information quickly and they just can't help but pitch. And that's like the worst way to sell. It's just the worst way to sell. The other thing I think about the future is again, to be more human, one of the things that I've toyed around with my students is we always talk about the ideal customer profile, the kind of company we want to sell products to, right? If we're in a B2B setting, it's in this industry, this many employees, that kind of revenue. They're a perfect target for us. Inside of every organization, there are the buyer personas of the people we want to reach. It might be the CIO or the cybersecurity officer or the director of HR. There's always someone that we view as the buyer persona, the right person to reach. And so much sales process is built around that buyer persona in that ideal customer profile.
Hmm.
I think there's another level that we ignore, and that is the prospect's personality. Mm-hmm. The type of company, the type of role the person plays, but then the final piece is, what is the personality of the person picking up that phone? And, you know, there's a lot of personality assessments out there. I use DISC a lot with clients and with my students. But I tell them, look, if you have a buyer, let's say you sell to the CIO, you sell some kind of product and the CIO is always the economic buyer, the final decision maker. If they're a dominant type personality, you have to sell to them in a certain way. If they're an influencing type personality, you've got to sell to them in a completely different way. And then an S and a C, the four different personality types. So really, every time we reach out to someone new, that conversation can go in one of four ways. I think sellers need to be so intuitive about the personalities they're selling to that they can jump around those personality types effectively, right? They have a conversation with each person effectively. So I think that's something that I haven't really seen a lot of emphasis on because we're so busy trying to get to that buyer persona that we sometimes lose track of the fact that two people like to be talked to in a completely different ways. We can't have the same talk track or questions for both. They're completely different personalities.
And there's technology and tools out there to help sellers with that, identify like on LinkedIn or on emails or things like that.
Yep.
Doing it at scale and widely used, not necessarily there, could be valuable. It's one of those things where it adds a layer of what else should you be aware of? Sometimes that can overwhelm people or they rely on that too much. And then how do you still go back to the human element with that, which is a great segue to the final part that I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the humans. We're talking about all that part where the goal is to actually engage with somebody once you finally get to them. You mentioned early on about the potential buyers using the same tools and technology to block and defend themselves versus the salespeople using it. Where do you see technology in the future or now helping salespeople? Like, what's important for them versus that balance of the human side?
It's hard, right? When I work with BDRs and SDRs and how frustrated they are at not being able to get connected to decision makers or even gatekeepers, right? Because of the way we block everything. This is where the marketing piece comes in, right? Where every seller has to almost be their own builder of campaigns and information and being able to establish their own online identity so that repeated attempts to try to reach you eventually, like when someone's trying to call me, I see the caller ID all the time, right? I'll Google it and I want to see who this person is. And if they leave a name, I'll go right to their LinkedIn profile. When I go to your LinkedIn profile, I don't want to see that you're business development rep at XYZ Corporation. I want to see how you help people. Tell me, even right up front, tell me a little story about someone that you helped in a similar situation as me. So the next time you try to contact me, I'll answer. And I know we do that at scale and we do that through a lot of automation. But my point is, let's really focus on that pre-work and that human element. So an example for me, because my title is director of a professional sales program at Bentley, I get a lot of inquiries from companies that want to sell me sales training, right? I am sales training, right? And they want to sell me sales training, or they want to sell me outsourced lead generation services or hiring services, right? So obviously all they're doing is scraping data out of LinkedIn and they're sending me these cold emails. It drives me nuts. But if I see an email or LinkedIn message that says something to the effect of spend less time prepping for classes and less time grading and spend more time enjoying teaching, I will open that email 10 out of 10 times. Why? That's what I care about, because I am a teacher. I'm an educator. I love being with my students and I hate prepping and I hate grading papers. So it's at that level. This is where that kind of buyer persona and then the deeper personality piece comes into play. This is part of it. We need to be more human, more personal in the future in a way that's not automated. The automated thing kills you, because I use those emails as examples of what not to do in my classes. My phone rings off the hook all day by companies trying to convince me that I need the employee tax credit from the COVID years. Right?
Employee tax credit, 30 more leads an hour, all kinds. Like,
I think it's a lot of it is the automation is efficient, but it ain't effective. Humans are effective. Yeah. So
makes sense. I think that's some really good tips, especially because I do the same exact thing. And I think a lot of people in sales think, oh, people don't do that. If I don't answer or I choose not to answer, I Google that phone number, even if they don't leave me a voicemail, to see who it is. And then I do that same thing where I do that research and find out, like, what is this about? Because if they're not in my phone, do I want to, like, that's just where my mind goes. Yeah. And so then what is your persona online? What does that look like? If I were to find your name and your company and I look you up, do I want to, like, then it's a, do I want to engage with you or not? Cause it's valuable, but also, are you professional or are you just another SDR, BDR going through your list to sell me things that, you know, you don't even have a clue about?
And I know that they have a lot to do, so they can't do deep research on everyone, but you don't need to do a lot of deep research. You just need to know your audience a little better and put yourself in their shoes, right? Like, how would I react to an email or a LinkedIn inquiry or a phone call from someone if I was the prospect? Like I just said, like, I know what I would answer the phone for, and I don't get a lot of those. Maybe I will now.
Maybe you will now. You'll get some good headlines. You'll see if there's a bait and switch in there or people who are actually valuable. But
that's right. I
doubt it. I think you'll still get the ones that you always get. Pooley, I appreciate you being on here. All of this stuff, from authenticity to the sales process to the future of sales to mental health, being happy, being happier at some level. I think all of it's important. And this was so valuable. I got so much from this. So much that we're going to put in the show notes for people who are tuning in. They want to find out about you, your book, your training, the school, like everything and anything that you're doing. It's easy to find you, Pooley, and also Jim Pooley, Pooleyopoulos on LinkedIn. Pretty easy. Again, Pooley, thank you for being here.
Thank you
for all the stuff that you've done transitioning from the corporate sales world into teaching, in that path that you didn't take early on, but was the path you were ultimately destined to be on. And now what you're doing for companies, for students, for individuals. I appreciate all that very much.
I thank you, Jason. This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
And I know that time absolutely flew on our side. These are episodes it's like where you just end up with it and see where it goes. Great conversations. Again, thank you, Pooley, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please make sure to share this. Get this out there. This is how we change the way sales is done, is by doing things different, seeing the role of salespeople differently, getting away from what used to be done and tolerated to what people are actually craving and looking for in the future now, and then being successful that way. And as always, thank you for everyone tuning in and for helping filling the world with authentic persuaders.